It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
It's time for Show Me the Franchise.
With Thomas and Frederick. With Thomas and Frederick.
Welcome to Show Me the Franchise, the podcast that talks about franchises of all shapes, sizes, backgrounds, genres, and types. I am your host, the Crown Prince of Crime, the one with the purple on. He never says that, but I... the Joker, here as usual with my criminal friend. What did you just mouth to me, young man?
Nothing, Mr. T. I'm just happy to be here.
I was, of course, going to call you the Fredler, but... Oh, Fred Harley Dayquin?
Just call me Dayquin. Don't call me Dayquil, you know what I'm saying?
I turned into John Travolta.
Just going to say, that was very like Danny Tamborelli.
Zuko?
Zuko. It was Tamborelli.
I have to say the joke that I wish I would have said when we were talking about Kirstie Alley.
Okay.
Back on our Cheers episode.
Okay.
I think we should have done episodes on Look Who's Talking because the plot of those movies are basically John Travolta saying, I'm going to make myself laugh. Sorry. Kirstie Alley, I need help with this kid because I'm too fucking stupid to do it myself. He just plays Danny Zuko in those movies.
He does.
Oh my God, these diapers. I don't know what to do. Kirstie Alley, help me out.
Hey man, that fed him and his family all until Quentin Tarantino like reclaimed him.
I'm sorry. I've been like sitting on that and being so mad I didn't bring that up in the Cheers episode. But yeah, we got to do the Look Who's Talking movies.
Because we got to talk about Bruce doing his like thing and he's, you know, he's the kid.
Yeah, I'm a baby.
Yeah.
Chill out.
Oh, what the hell, man? Why am I doing this? Nah, I don't want to do it.
Yep. And then the third movie is where it's the dogs and it's like Dane DeVito and like Roseanne or something like that.
Well,
I think Roseanne is the sister in the second one.
Right. And the third one, yeah, it's DeVito, and then it's like, is it like real Ray Perlman?
That would be worth going back for me now that we're talking so much Cheers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that would be quite the coup to have, you know, Kirstie Alley in, you know, the mom role.
Yeah, that could do it. I do remember that one being the most normal, even though it was the talking dogs. But like, because the Look Who's Talking movies are certifiably insane.
Yeah, that's why I think it'd be fun to do an episode on them, because the second one has the talking toilet played by Mel Brooks.
Yes.
Give me the pee-pee.
Give me the pee-pee.
I'm sorry I sidetracked the Batman, but as soon as I did the Danny Zuko, I could not drop it.
Hey, man, it's all good. I know, I'm trying to see who was... Oh, my God, it was Diane Keaton was the female dog.
What? Should have been Rhea Perlman.
It should have.
They probably had it. And she's like, Danny, I'm not doing another movie with you. We got Matilda. That's it.
Rhea, come on.
But of course, we're getting inside. Well, here's the segue back. Danny DeVito, obviously famously the Penguin in Tim Burton's Batman Returns. And we're talking some Batman today. So there is some connections here between Look Who's Talking and these Batman games, because obviously Danny DeVito does not voice the Penguin in this series. But we are talking about Batman, the Arkham series?
Yeah, the Arkham series. I think that's a good name for it. This is our second Batman episode.
It is. Mm-hmm. And somehow neither of those are the Dark Knight. So...
Well, you know, we got to have Joe Francisco to come back. He's going to do, you know, the
Joe
dark...
who?
Joe Francisco.
Oh.
What did you think I said?
You kind of said like Franciscus or something.
I think my tongue had a little cordon bleu going, you know, because he wants to come on, talk about some, you know, weird game that I've never heard of. But he's got a commitment to finish out these Batman movies. He's got to do the Nolan trilogy. He's got to do the Snyderverse. He has to do the black and white Snyder Cut commentary episode. He has to do the Batman. And then he has to do the Batman 2 speculation episode before he even gets to whatever game he wants to talk about.
Hang on there, Fred. If we're going to do the Batman,
Does that mean we also do Penguin?
Oh, yeah, our episode on the Penguin. Look, I understand. It's on HBO. You might not have that. But you can watch it. You can stream it.
You forgot now, Fred. Times have changed. It's Max now. It's not HBO no more.
Hey, who's in the White House? I kind of like that guy. Some people say I'm kind of like him.
He does have big DT energy.
DT energy?
Oh, my God. Big DT energy instead of big T.
big DT energy?
Yeah.
Little DT energy, we'll say.
Little DT energy. But he's mostly Tony Soprano, if you like, gave him a little bit of DT in there.
Sopranos meets DT.
Yeah, exactly. Affiliate thing? I mean, all the way to...
He did doing the Penguin is just say, I understand. I understand.
I understand. Ma. Yeah. Man, you can't do this to yourself no more.
Kind of funny, though, too, because the Penguin in this game,
he's doing himself an English accent.
He's Cockney.
He's Cockney.
Which, it's funny, though, because Colin Farrell is I mean, he's an Irishman, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I thought they were going to go for, because I would love to see that style of the one that we have in the Arkham games that we're talking about, because that is a comic book origin story, is that he's like a pickpocket off the streets of London.
Yes.
And I always thought that was kind of an interesting twist on the story, just because we grew up with the other version, like the deformed, gothic Tim Burton version.
Right. But then that one also has the New York accent. He's got the DeVito, which it's like he kind of redid that and sort of, which like... Burgess Meredith, like, he did not have a very East Coast accent at all. He's very almost like, what is the word? I'm like, not Shakespearean. What's the, it's like that type of like acting though, or.
Transatlantic?
Yeah, kind of transatlantic. I can't even do it.
I didn't watch much of the old Batman. I thought he did like more of a like 30s gangster thing. Is that not him?
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of like what he's going for. He's got like the top hat. He's the very like gentleman criminal,
mm-hmm.
which like I kind of miss that Penguin, but maybe that was the reason they didn't go for that, because it's sort of like, well, it's been done.
All right.
So again, no, not even talking about any of those, but we are talking about
the British version of the Penguin,
yeah?
You got it there, bats.
I don't even know what he calls them again. It's been so long since I've played Arkham City, but I have played it multiple times. Love that game. So, yeah, of course, we're talking about Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Knight. That's kind of the core of our conversation here. We'll kind of dance a little around Arkham Origins, but that was a different studio that made that. And then Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, technically lives in the Arkham universe.
So does Arkham Knights.
Same developer. Arkham Knights. Oh, Gotham Knights?
Gotham Knights. I think that's part of that whole spiel. It connects to the story, and they have, what's his name, do the voice of Batman.
Conroy?
Yeah, that's like his last role.
Really? But it's not Rocksteady that did that game, is it?
Maybe not, but it feels like the Justice League game, not to get ahead, like it's the same gameplay. It's got to be at least adjacent in some way, like the Origins was.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, it is the same studio that did Arkham Origins.
Makes sense.
That's why it kind of feels like all part of that. But either way, we are here to talk about the overall Arkham series. I think all these games are kind of part of it. They're all under that umbrella. For those who are not familiar, basically the whole premise is it's a Batman video game. It's an open world game where essentially you can go around and you can kind of like fight different enemies and different of like Batman's rogues gallery all over Gotham City. But it starts very small. You're on Arkham Island, where the Arkham Asylum is in the first game. Arkham City, suddenly they've talked to people into turning part of Gotham City into a prison.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Carpenter movie, the Escape from New York vibe,
yes.
Where Arkham City is now a prison state.
Correct. And then Arkham Knight is just like, rails are off.
Yeah.
Here's the rest more of Gotham that. City. Yeah. Which, I mean, yeah, we'll talk about how effective some of these were. But mainly, the biggest thing is just the fact that it is all a Batman game where you get to be the Batman.
Definitely.
What was your first exposure to these games, Fred?
I think there was a demo for the Arkham Knight that came out. I think that was 360 time.
Okay.
I remember eventually grabbing it and playing through it and just loving it. I remember right when Arkham City came out, I got that. And I believe when I played Origins, I'll just skip over that and just say I've done that. We'll talk a little about it. And then when Arkham Knight came out, I think that was a PS4 release. So there was a little delay because I didn't have PS4. But when I got my PS4, it was a combo where I got the PS4 and Batman together.
Nice. Yeah, I think that was a bundle for a while, wasn't it?
Yep, I believe so. And I played the crap out of all of them. Like you said, I've played through these probably at least three times each now because I did a recent playthrough. I love these games.
Yeah, they're very good. Yeah, interesting. So Arkham Knight was like your entry point then, huh?
No. I messed up. Arkham Asylum. Yeah. Okay. They all have very similar names. It's hard. But no, I've grown with the things as they've come out, games.
That's great. I mean, because I was sort of a late bloomer. I think City had come out by the time I had an opportunity to play Asylum, because I was also a latecomer to the Xbox 360 and I never owned a PS3. So when I finally got my 360, it was a whole long rigmarole of why I even got a 360 to begin with. Somebody had a Red Ring. I basically bought a shell, reused their hard drive because I was way cheaper. That shell ended up
having Red Ring. Oh, gosh.
So anyway, I still have a 360, but I never play it because that thing is so busted. It's just like gambling every time you try and turn it on.
Right.
But long story short, got it. Arkham City had come out, finally decided to go back, play Arkham Asylum first and Arkham City. And I was just like, I mean, I don't know if you guys know, I don't know if you know this, Fred, I kind of like Batman.
Yeah, Batman is my guy. I don't consider myself a big comic book person, but I consider myself a big Batman person.
Yeah. I mean, Batman's my favorite of just everything. So I was just smitten, you know, right out the gate, the fact that they built this whole like environment, this whole like open world Batman game. And yeah, I loved it. And I ended up buying a PS4 just to play Arkham Knight.
Nice.
Like that was the whole, I waited and waited until that was going to come out. And I waited till they actually were going to release it. And you know, and I still really like Arkham Knight. I do think I like the other two a little bit better, but I just remember just those being so good to me. I mean, I've gone through the games at least twice each, if not more, but I can't remember anymore.
Yeah, they're good because they are good Batman stories. They're bringing in voice casts that are familiar. It makes it feel like a part of the animated series. It makes it feel, it feels a part of the Nolan movies in some ways. It feels a part of the Tim Burton movies. It kind of is piecemealed from all these different versions of Batman we like. And then it throws in some comic lore that is not in the movies. And then it has a very diverse style of play. You know, there's that kind of beat 'em up combos. I'm trying to think, like combo counter fights, you know, like the Spider-Man games or the Mordor games made by, I think, the same company, the original, like Shadow of Mordor or whatever. I love that you can do like a punchy style game and you can be sneaky. That's something I love, stealth, but I don't want it to be the only option in a game.
Oh, yeah. Because sometimes you just get tired of it too. And you're like, all right, I'm just going to brute force my way through this section. I'm tired of it.
Sometimes you want to call out everyone in the camp and just start slicing and dicing in the like Sekiro style. Or not Sekiro, Ghost of Tsushima style.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Oh, gosh.
Wait. Another game very in the veins of the Batman games, I
absolutely. Would say. Yeah, I mean, it is exactly that type of thing. But I definitely think, yeah, what this game really does well, though, too, and it's like the mechanics are pretty smooth all throughout each of them. Like, you never feel like it's clunky. And so if you want to do stealth, you're never going to like trip on something or whatever or accidentally run. You know, it's like when you're in stealth mode, you're there. And I feel like that's very true to Batman, too, because it's sort of like that's sort of his thing is like true to the character. He is somebody who is good at both those things. He can operate in the shadows, kind of pick people off one by one, which is the most fun when you're kind of like perched up on like a high part of a room and you're just grabbing dudes off of like the ground and pulling them up. And they're like, what happened to Steve?
Where is this guy?
Where is he?
Yeah, and great gadget use. I think when I was younger, like when I first played, I kind of struggled getting into like sneaking in the quick time uses of the different tools, the batarangs. But if you get that down, the gameplay in like especially Arkham City, yeah. I would say, is magnificent. Just like you said, very smooth. You're punching, you can throw a batarang, or you're throwing an electric shock thing. That's some. Sometimes you get Mr. Freeze's like freeze gun, so you can freeze an enemy. He's like stuck like this, and then you can punch other people while he's frozen.
Yeah.
I love all that stuff. And then you also have that thing very similar to the Spider-Man games where you can traverse the city in a very appeasing way. Like in the Arkham games, not the first one, but the later ones, you have your batarang where you can zip up to a top of a building and then you can kind of like glide, do dives and like use wind and kind of be able to traverse and fly around the city.
Right.
I think that's super fun too.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's a very, yeah, like you said, it's just a very like pleasing aesthetic whenever you're flying through there. And it's kind of like a chill moment where you get to sort of just kind of glide between one spot or another. You get to kind of hear, like, he has like his radio going and you can kind of listen in on people's conversations and and kind of figure out where the action is next. So you're sort of like patrolling a little bit. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there's always the issue of Batman's the police state, but
yeah,
it's just fun. It's fun to be the Batman. I think that's what these games get right. That was their promise to you out the gate. And you get that and then some. And then it's like, if you are a fan of the lore, there is so much for you there. I think one thing you said, too, that I really wanted to pick on is that it does feel familiar, but yet still feels so much like its own thing. And I think that's the magic trick it's doing, is that you'll recognize elements from all these other like Batman properties and things that you know. But still, it's like when you see this and you see the art and you see the design and all that, it still feels very quintessentially like Arkham. So
yep, it's its own thing while being like representative of the other things.
Absolutely. And maybe we should get a little bit into the history to kind of understand why that is. So the first game, Arkham Asylum, which came out back in 2009 at this point. So it's been a little bit, as of this year, it's 16 years. So it all started though back in August 2008. Where Rocksteady Studios, which was under the aegis of Eidos Interactive and Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, basically Eidos like obtained the rights to make a Batman game like a year prior, and then they approached Rocksteady, who was very little known. They were just a small little British studio that had just maybe done a couple small type of projects, and they're like, "What do you guys think about the Batman?" And they're like, "Well, we can maybe give you a pitch."
We only have one rule. The Penguin's British. Just like us.
I understand.
I understand.
But I guess by May 2007, then they had begun developing the game's concept because Rocksteady had won the contract here. Now, the key part was, though, so Rocksteady had shown a concept of art to this other studio, Eidos, and was like, "We think we can make something really cool." And they were sold on it the minute they saw it. They were like, okay, yep. Kind of showed what some of the gameplay was going to be, what some of the art was going to look like. But the big thing that they got then, too, was they approached Paul Dini, who wrote Batman the Animated Series and ended up becoming a comic book writer for DC for a little bit. But he was approached by DC Comics around late 2007 about the prospect of creating a story for an original Batman video game. And he liked this idea because basically he believed that most Batman games up until that point were always based on an existing property. They were adaptations of a movie or the TV show, his own animated series for that matter. And so he was like, well, this is cool. I have an opportunity to write an original Batman story that maybe can feel. And I think if you really boil it down, like it does share the story beats and everything with the animated series. But it is definitely, like, if you tried to separate and you've never seen any of the animated series, you wouldn't be lost.
Right.
So by the time Paul Dini joined the project, Rocksteady was investigating the idea of setting the game within Arkham Asylum, and it produced a preliminary design depicting it as this huge estate that was on an island cut off from Gotham City. Like, you'd only get there by a bridge. There was a graphic novel called Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth, which was written by Grant Morrison, who's kind of a legendary comic writer now at this point. You're familiar with any of his work?
I always remembered him having just an Arkham book. I didn't know it had that long title, but I've definitely read through that for sure.
Yeah, and it's definitely a very kind of spooky art style.
Yeah, the games are more subdued than the book.
Yeah.
The book is like...
It's unhinged.
Nightmare fuel. Yeah. Good, in a great way. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely kind of represents a very warped view of like, almost like told from the perspective of somebody who is a... inmate at Arkham Asylum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Arkham Asylum was then chosen as the setting because it ended up confining the player to an area containing several enemies. So they liked that idea of like, let's put Batman in a room with a lot of guys so that he can kind of clear a room in a very Batman way. Whereas they thought that in an open city, he could receive help. You know, he could go back to the Batcave or he could otherwise kind of distance himself from his opponents. He wouldn't feel so closed in. And that is, I think, the trick that the first game kind of gives you is that there are times where you sort of feel like you got nowhere else to go. You got to just go forward, and that's the only way forward to go. Like, there's no going backward sometimes.
Which is the gift and the curse of the first game, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So the development team wanted to include iconic aspects of the Batman mythos, and in the same vein of getting Paul Dini, and you teed this up right at the beginning, they got a voice cast that was very familiar. They got the same voice cast from the animated series. Kevin Conroy as Batman. Mark Hamill as the Joker.
Tara Strong?
Nope. Not for the first game.
Okay.
Arlene Sorkin, who was the original Harley Quinn and the inspiration for the character, too. Because she was on, like, I can't remember if it was Days of Our Lives or another soap opera, but... there's a whole story where, like, Paul Dini saw this episode of a soap opera with Arlene Sorkin in it. Dressed as a Harlequin and came up with this idea of like, that would be a really fun sidekick for the Joker or some kind of like, you know, grunt. And so they built that, they cast her as that character. And so she voiced Harley Quinn for this first game. That's just random knowledge I've got.
I love it.
The history. But the game took approximately 21 months to complete. So Rocksteady began development with a team of 40, which had expanded to around 60 by the game's completion. Arkham Asylum was then released on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 in August 25th, 2009, as I teed up originally. Game received critical acclaim, was nominated for Game of the Year at the Spike Video Game Awards. So now we have the Game Awards, the TGAs. That was started in 2014, though. So prior to that, I think this is based on Spike TV. It was like the Spike Video Game Awards. So that was kind of the prestigious ceremony, their own Oscars at the time, before the Game Awards came along. And I don't know. The Game Awards are kind of... they're not the end-all be-all. They don't have the same kind of prestige that the Oscars have. I know they want that, but...
Right.
I don't know. Till they get a nickname that's like the... I don't know, the...
The gamies.
Yeah, the gamies are like the Marios or something.
The Marios.
So it did not win Game of the Year. Lost to Uncharted 2, based on a previous episode that we had done ourselves on Uncharted. But Rocksteady, the studio, did win Studio of the Year.
Ooh.
So what were some of your overall thoughts? You said, for better or worse, it was felt a little closed in, Arkham Asylum.
I think... when playing it at the time, I kind of did, like, you have the feeling of the tight space, which gives, like, gives cadence to the story, makes it interesting, gives you that feeling that probably Batman is feeling. But I do think there was a part of me that always kind of wanted, like, a GTA style of a Batman game, just kind of free roaming. And we'll talk about it. I learned as more of that came in, it became less of a game I enjoyed, to be honest. So it's kind of like when I say a gift and a curse is like in the moment I felt like I'm liking this, but I want to be able to explore more. But I also think it adds to the feel of the story too.
Yeah. No, very true to itself in that regard, where they are trying to almost feel like, or make Batman feel like an inmate, right? Like, and I think Is inmate the right term for people who are in Arkham Asylum? I guess so, right? Like, because it is like a prison.
Yes, because I always thought it's like prison and hospital, like, which is, I don't think, a thing in this sense in the real world.
No, it feels a little problematic.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's some tricky stuff here. But I now like how small, in compared to the later games, the first game feels.
Yeah, I think you get a better appreciation for it when you play Arkham Knight, and it's almost like there's like too much going on. There's too many places to go. Where Arkham City kind of finds that happy medium between those. But, I mean, the story is pretty great, and I think you kind of mentioned it too. Like, it serves it very well because you're trying to go through this almost like maze or whatever that the Joker has set up for you. And I don't know. That's just the fact that there's like all these different, like, it's like around every turn there's like a rogue that, or like a member of the rogues gallery who's like trying to have it out for Batman. You know, maybe they have their own vision. Like, you have to fight the Scarecrow, and like the dream sequences are, I mean, probably among what, the most memorable part of the game.
Yeah, it has these abstract dream sequences, which are some of my favorite, with Scarecrow. And it also just has an element that we don't really get in Batman these days, which are like fantasy elements. You know, it has giant killer croc. It has, for lack of a better word, supernatural stuff happening within the game, or otherworldly, which I think is... it's cool. That's what I'm missing from my Batman movies, to be honest.
Yeah, because they are too grounded right now, right? Mm-hmm. It's like they don't have anything that is sort of like the, I don't know, something to the end of, like, even when they put in Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul or whatever you want to call him, in the Batman Begins movie, there's nothing about the Lazarus Pit or anything.
No, he's just like works out, so he lives long. Like, he's in good shape. So yeah, he's right. Like, oh, I take care of myself.
If you do it yourself, you can do there as well. Liam Neeson was so good in that.
We're so lucky that we had a Batman Begins. We're like, in this part, we're going to have Liam Neeson.
Right.
For this part, Michael Caine. For this part, Morgan Freeman. Why not? Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
He's going to play like that guy. I mean, I like that character, but Gary Oldman?
Yeah, I know.
I just love that. We'll talk about it.
Pulling in. Yeah, we'll get to the Dark Knight series one of these days. But I definitely think for this game, though, yeah, you do have a lot of very strong voice acting performances, especially like Hamill, Conroy. Like, they are a classic pair, I think, at this point. Some people's like quintessential idea of who Batman and Joker are. But I think beyond that, you just have a story where it's sort of like Batman's no longer the one in control. And I feel like so often in stories where Batman is like the protagonist, it's like, yeah, sometimes the world gets a little crazy. Dark Knight kind of gives him a little bit like out of control, where it's like he's sort of like, you know, having to play in someone else's playground a little bit. But this is truly the first time it feels like he's outnumbered. Mm-hmm. He's minimal resources. Like, by the end of the game, his suit is like torn up.
That's the cool part, how the suit deteriorates as you play.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, representing that he's going through hell trying to get through this night that he's doing here with this whole thing, and just fighting what, like, thousands of people. Like, or it feels like it, at least. Maybe it's hundreds, but either way, it's a pretty incredible game. Did you freak out during the Scarecrow sequence when it looked like your game reset?
Yeah, it always still surprises me. I don't know if I freaked out, but it did surprise me. I really liked, on topic, off topic, I love it in God of War Ragnarok, where you get beat up by Thor and it's like you lost and you're dead. And then Thor goes, "No, not yet." And then the screen goes electric and he brings you back to life. It's like the restart screen.
Yeah.
And he like meta style like interrupts it. And that just made me think of the Scarecrow thing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because I was like, I remember the first time that happened, I was like, oh my God, my game did not just skip or whatever the fuck. I was like, this is so stupid. And then I kept watching and I'm like, wait, this is different. Like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
But I did think everything with, yeah, there's something about how the Scarecrow was done in the first game here in Asylum that I didn't think they were able to quite replicate in Night. I mean, I liked the dream sequences in Night, but I didn't love it the same way as here, where it felt like you were like in like this like completely warped world.
Yeah, and is it the first one where, like, all of a sudden you're, like, little Bruce Wayne walking down the hallway and stuff like that? Yeah, all that great character stuff where, like, we're going to take a couple of minutes. You're just going to press forward on the walk stick, and we're going to give you like some cool character, cool visuals. And this is going to be an experience versus I want to get to the next room full of dudes and beat them up.
Right. Yeah. You get to enjoy a little bit of like story building, and a little character building. And yeah, and it's kind of wild what you like learn about too. And like you find out like the warden is like kind of crazy himself, mm-hmm. and like he's been up to like nonsense and. Oh, some great twists. I think the best Easter egg I found, and obviously these are spoilers now for the game, which we've been doing already. But there's a part at the very beginning of the game where you like you go into like the main building where the Joker is or whatever, and you see like what looks like a mannequin with like the Joker's suit on and like a TV on his head.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, like sorry, you gotta go around. And it's like, I think you find out somehow. That, like, somehow if you, like mix it up a little bit or whatever, like, you see that thing move and you realize it actually is the Joker sitting, like, behind the other end of the glass. Mm-hmm. And Batman just thinks it's just a doll or whatever. But it's, like, he could have ended it all right there. Could have just broken through the glass and grabbed mm-hmm. him. But
that's always the funny part about Batman and the Joker is, like, if he could just get his hands on him, it's over.
Yeah. But it's always kind of tricky. I think if I had one criticism too about this is the final battle felt very, I don't know, like that.
Video gamey?
Yeah.
Which is not what they've given us for most of the game.
No. And also I was like, why do we have like a Titan jacked up Joker? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. That it felt like, yeah, we needed a good final boss. We needed it to be the Joker, but I almost appreciated more in like, what was it, 2, where you do just kind of fight Joker with like a knife and like.
Is that the where you're in the room with the 2 train tracks? Yeah. And you're that might come up later.
All right. I'll stick with it then. But I don't know. It was a good kickoff for the series, I think. Asylum was a nice way to start it and set the territory. Because they had already machinations or imagination of what could come next after this. So, Arkham Asylum had a Guinness Book of World Record for most critically acclaimed superhero game ever, which is a very specific thing at the time. It was a Metacritic score of 91.6 until it was inevitably succeeded by Arkham City.
Ooh, makes sense.
So, Rocksteady conceived the idea of a sequel before development of Arkham Asylum had concluded, developing ideas for both the story and setting so the game's narratives could effectively be connected. And there is a secret room in Arkham Asylum inside the warden's office in which there is a map of or a blueprint of the Arkham City prison. And it turns out that map was pretty accurate. They almost hit it right on the head. And inevitably, when the game had some success or at least started seeing like, I think we might have something here, they began serious development of the Arkham City's story and concept back in February 2009. So it's about 6 months before the Arkham Asylum came out. And the teams that were working on Arkham Asylum went directly into working on Arkham City, just as they completed work on the previous game. So, by the time they had programmed Batman to, like, dive and glide between buildings in Arkham Asylum, the adaptation of that gameplay to being in a city environment kind of felt, they said, pretty natural. Because they're like, once we had that mechanic, like, down ready to go, we can make it happen. So, the one thing that Rocksteady did consider, so now we're in this city environment, is they did not want to include the Batmobile because they were like, it would kind of, one, logistically be unable to work on the open terrain, but two, they also really liked the idea of like, it's almost more pleasing, as we mentioned, to just glide between locations.
Yes.
Versus having like a Batmobile that could drive you from one spot to the next.
And I also don't think, and they do something weird in the next game that we can talk about later, is I feel they also just don't want the idea of you driving around a Batmobile and just running over people.
Yeah.
As Batman. I think that had to part of it to do with it, at least. I think the logistics were the huger part, but like, I think they want to keep the morals of who Batman is within the game And I think that that's something they might have thought about. Like, they don't want people like Grand Theft Auto style just like running people over, even if they are the bad guys, quote unquote.
And correct me if I'm wrong, in Arkham Knight, isn't it like if you try to run somebody over, it like auto brakes?
No, it has like a shock thing.
Oh, that's
where it like
right.
shocks them and shoots them away. And I'm like, okay.
I know, kind of lame, but at the same end, I get why they would want to stay true to Batman's like ethos of being like, I don't kill. Arkham City was released in North America on October 18th, 2011. So just 2 short years after Arkham Asylum came out, Arkham City was completed. Like Asylum, Batman Arkham City received critical acclaim, once again being nominated for the Spike Video Game of the Year, but losing to 2011. What would have been the game of the year?
I don't know. Give me a hint.
We have talked about this game on the podcast or this series.
And it's not an Uncharted?
Not an Uncharted.
Oh,
Uncharted 3 was nominated that year, but did not win.
Star Wars game? All right, I give up. Just tell me.
Skyrim.
We did do a Skyrim with Eric Conis.
Yes. Yes. So
that makes sense. I'd give it to Skyrim.
That's why I'm kind of mad because Arkham City is such a brilliant game, but Skyrim is like so totemic in like the way of video game culture. So it did, but Arkham City did win Best Adapted Game, Best Action Adventure Game, and the Joker was voted Best Character. So Mark Hamill got a little award for that.
The Joker tends to get awards.
Yeah, it's true. Everybody who plays the Joker gets awarded at some point. It is kind of crazy now you think about it. Other than Jack Nicholson, like
Jared Leto. No, yeah, no.
Nope.
I kind of get him confused with Joaquin Phoenix in the Joker vibe of things.
Right. No, because he did the crazy like Joaquin, but Joaquin Phoenix is a much better actor. So Arkham City though, bigger, better, different.
Definitely. Arkham City, I would put, if I had to make a list of like, I would even say top 5 games, it's going to be on there.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
And playing through, because I did a playthrough of all these leading into the holidays, and just like I expected, 2 felt just so good playing through. I actually even was doing like little side things, which wasn't my intent to do, like going back, you know, like why would I waste time? But I found myself going after Riddler trophies, doing this and that.
Yeah, I guess we should probably talk about the Riddler trophy of it all, because for the most part, these games are pretty straightforward. But the one things that you can do as a side quest is solve all the Riddler's trophies or find all his trophies and find all of his clues and all that stuff. And ultimately, Arkham Asylum doesn't really give you a big payoff other than like he's like, hey, I got away.
Yeah, I guess I've never completed them all the way to know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not a game completer. I mean, I'm a story completer. But I'm like, once I play the story, usually I tell myself like, oh, I'll beat it and then I'll go back. But usually I'm like, I'm kind of over it at this point.
I definitely got all the Riddler trophies in every game. And wow. That is an accomplishment that I did twice over and I don't know why. But I think I got so irritated with the Riddler in Arkham City that I was like, I'm going to find every one of these and I hope I get a chance to punch him. And I did. And that felt great. Because then you get to capture the Riddler. And I like the Riddler. I think he's a fun character. He's very silly.
Yeah, he can be. Unless you're Paul Dano.
Oh, yeah. And then he's a little more... Does he know? But, yeah, I think that's a... But that's an aspect. Yeah, there is something for everybody. Are you somebody who enjoys that GTA aspect? Arkham City kind of has you covered. You can go around and just sort of like find different ways to combat. You can kind of find little hidden areas that maybe you don't know like when you first see it. Like there's a blimp, I think, or something like that, or a warehouse where you can find like Scarecrow's mask, because Scarecrow's really not in the sequel at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of good little Easter eggs in these games, especially City.
Yeah. And then I think the whole plot where it kind of gets into the whole like Ra's al Ghul of it all, and you start to find out like there's like a Lazarus pit under the city, and Who dies in this one that he revives? Doesn't Batman like revive somebody, or am I totally making that up?
I have them all blurred now. I know. I think the end of the second one is the Hugo Strange.
Yes. Oh, so yeah, Hugo Strange is kind of the antagonist of this one.
And there's like the first one has the sick. Is Batman getting sick in the first one? He has to find the cure. No, that's all Arkham City. So yeah, I played these all too close together. But yeah, I don't remember who he ends. I think it's Talia, maybe.
Oh, it might be, yeah. Maybe. Or, yeah, I can't remember anymore. But yeah. I know that the Lazarus Pit is a thing. I know that you have to fight, like, Ra's al Ghul, like, through the desert or whatever, and, like, that, like, vision. That's, like, the closest thing we get to a Scarecrow-type, like, dream sequence in this. And it's definitely a fun outing. I don't know. I mean, everything through, I think... It really kicks into gear. Like, I think, like, the very first mission, you, like, have to, like, escape because Penguin, like, kind of grabs you right away. And then you escape from that. And, you find your bat suit. And because you're Bruce Wayne first walking into there, right? And I know that was so crazy, too. I'm like, whoa, you got to, like, fight people as Bruce Wayne?
Mm-hmm. And you get Two-Face in here, who's real intense in the games.
Yep. And then you also get Catwoman. You get to play as Catwoman.
Yes, I love playing as Catwoman.
Yeah, very fun alternative. And I do think this is the first time we do get to play. Because, you know, do you play as Robin in this one? I can't remember. Or is he just in it?
I think he just pops up in it.
Right. But Catwoman's the only other playable character.
Yes.
And yeah, I think it's a nice change of pace to play as a different character. And that's probably the most fun of even Arkham Knight then, too, is when you do get to play as somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you do get to play as, like, the couple other, well, Robin and then Nightwing, but...
Yes.
But, yeah, in this one, I definitely do like the whole idea of, like, well, they, like, have, like, the Joker virus or whatever, and people are, like, turning into the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's classic Batman stuff, people getting, like, the Joker smiles and looking like him.
It is kind of funny, because now when I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, why can't I get the story straight? There are so many different story beats happening, right? Mm-hmm. It's like Batman has to recover, like, this... This cure for the Joker, because it's like he's been infected with the same disease that the Joker has.
And then there's like two Jokers or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's like, yeah, he's like, Joker's convinced Clayface to be like a healthy version of him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the whole story where, yeah, like Hugo Strange is like running the prison, and like Batman has to like try and find Hugo Strange and kind of like stop him from whatever machinations he has to play. And then there's the whole thing where, like, well, Ra's al Ghul is like mixed up with Hugo Strange, and then like Talia al Ghul shows up and kind of like throws Batman off. I mean, but somehow it never feels like you're losing track of where the story is. Like, everything takes you from one point to the next, and it all feels logical when you're playing it. Like, yes, okay, now I'm gonna go confront Hugo Strange. I'm gonna climb up this tower. Going to take out this room full of guys with like sniper rifles and shit. And I don't know. I think it iterates so well on Arkham Asylum, where it doesn't feel small, and it just feels like you're able to really like spread your wings a little bit, but there's still a linear path when you really need to get down to it.
Yeah, it's on rails, but it doesn't feel that way as much in the second one.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And yeah, I just think it's a fun story and a shocking ending with the Joker just straight up dying.
Yep.
Yeah, like that. I don't think you ever expect, right? Like, and I mean, that's almost what's shocking too, even about the third one. You're like convinced, like, there's no way Joker can be dead, right? It's like, no way. They wouldn't kill the Joker. And it's like, nope, he is very much completely dead. And that's just it. I don't know. Other thoughts on City?
No, I think that, like I said, it's an all-timer for me, for just games in general.
Yeah.
I think I can comfortably say I don't know if I'd go through the whole trilogy again in my lifetime, but I could definitely see revisiting City again.
Yeah. I think City would be a worthwhile replay if it's like, and I think they've remastered it a couple of times.
Right? They recently just kind of did like a little touch-up remaster, and you can get it. It's called the Arkham Collection. You get the first two games remastered up a little bit, and they're nice, very smooth. I mean, they always have been, but even better.
That's good. I think that'd be worthwhile. I'll have to check that out. So, following Arkham City, development began on Arkham Knight in 2011, once they once again completed work on Arkham City. But this game was going to take 4 years to finish, and I think the team even knew at the time. They were like, we got 3 years, I think, at least ahead of us of development because we want to make this bigger. Because that's kind of the vision, is like they wanted all of Gotham City in the next game. So Warner Brothers, they were like, hey, you've given us two bangers so far. We're going to give you the time to do that. But they felt that 3 years was a little bit too long between games, so they contracted out WB Games Montreal to create a prequel game in the meantime called Arkham Origins to help fill the gap between Arkham City and Arkham Knight. And Origins, we can talk very briefly about it because it's different voice cast, pretty much different everything.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like it really offered a lot new.
No, it was more the same. And it was hard because I really wanted to compare these. So I went back and I played the 1 and 2, but they were remasters for some reason. They haven't gone back and remastered Origins. So I had to stream it too, which, you know, is always clunkier.
Sure.
And it just felt like not as smooth and a little off. And I don't know if that was just because I was playing the remasters or what, but like jumping in that, I was going to play through them all, and I kind of played for about 30 minutes maybe, and I was like, I think I'm good. Nothing, it wasn't anything horrible. I just didn't need it.
Yeah, it definitely felt like they took aspects of Arkham City, kind of reskinned it with like, here's what it looked like earlier, you know, same area. And then, oh, and here's the Batplane that can like drop you between like drop locations, which was kind of nice in some regard. But I'm like, I also kind of like the challenge of trying to get across the city and just sort of like ziplining your way over buildings and stuff and kind of like doing fast gliding. So I don't know. I think the only memorable thing I could remember from this game was like you fight Deathstroke, and Deathstroke is just intense. And
yep.
I just remember that battle feeling very challenging, but also very rewarding because it did feel like it was like two masters of their craft, just sort of like exchanging blows, and you had to be very precise with your hit combos. Like you couldn't just like brute force him. You had to kind of like maneuver around him and find the right like strike points versus just like, okay, I'm going to go up, I'm going to punch Bane a couple times and then try and get around him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something, I think there's a young Bane in that game too, but I don't know.
Young Bane.
Young Bane. The Bane fight in Arkham Asylum was definitely fun, though, too. Is he in Arkham City?
Yes, because you kind of team up with him a little bit, and then he double-crosses you. He has, like, the bonus objective of destroying all the Titan tanks.
That's right. Because he doesn't want to get that out in the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, that's my stuff.
So selfish is Bane.
Mm-hmm. Well, roids do that to you.
Yeah. But yeah, so Arkham Origins, I'm like, outside of that, I couldn't even tell you what the story is anymore. And
oh, it's the origins. It's a bit of a shrug.
I mean, it almost kind of felt like the same plot of like the Batman, like the Robert Pattinson one. It's like year two or something like that. And it's like, okay, he's established, and here he is trying to punch people again. So while Origins was kind of the next game to come out there too, in August 2012, back to the development of Arkham Knight, Paul Dini said he would not be involved with writing the sequel. So he wrote both Asylum and Arkham City, but I guess he stated that there really wasn't a lot of interest in that. And I guess when he talked to Warner Brothers and Rocksteady, they suggested that if he had other work offered, he should accept it.
Jeez.
So I don't know what happened there or why, if it was something that like he wanted a little more control of like everything, or
maybe he was expensive in their eyes,
which is possible because video game companies are notoriously cheap.
Yeah.
So it's very possible they were like, he's priced out, we're not going to be able to keep him. So Rocksteady instead opted to use its own team of writers, headed by the game director Sefton Hill and designer Ian Ball, with script elements by Martin Lancaster and Jeff Johns, who was then the head of DC, served as a consultant on the plot. Rock City decided early on in development to make Arkham Knight only for the upcoming next-gen consoles, which was considered to allow them to focus using the system resources to their fullest without retaining ideas to accommodate like the older generation systems. So basically, this gave them a lot more capabilities because, like, I think in the past they could only have like 20 enemies on a screen at a time, but using like a PS4 or Xbox One, you could have 5 times the number of on-screen enemies as was possible in Arkham City. So it's something like 50 to 100 like enemies could come at you at once. So after a delay from its original date, it was supposed to come out in fall 2014, hence their like timeline of like, we need 3 years. They ended up delaying it all the way till June 23rd of 2015. The reason was, according to marketing game manager Guy Perkins, was that if we didn't give the team more time to do it, then we would be releasing something that we weren't happy with. We want to make sure we're absolutely nailing it 100%. And when Arkham Knight did inevitably come out that following June for all the next-gen consoles, as I mentioned, I ended up getting a PlayStation 4 for that, received generally favorable reviews, if not quite as good as Asylum and City. Some reviews kind of cited being frustrated with the Batmobile mechanics, as you already kind of teased, and there wasn't enough new in comparison to Arkham City. So, received a couple nominations at the Game Awards, which was then in its second year, so now we're talking about not the Spike Game Awards, the actual Game Awards. So it got nominated for Best Action Adventure Game and Best Performance for the Joker, but did not win either of those this time. So, kind of a, I hesitate to call it a step down because I do really like Arkham Knight still. But I think if you're telling me, like, is it as good as the other two, I'm going to tell you right away.
Yeah. Or is it, does it feel like a next gen upgrade
of necessarily? Arkham City?
You know?
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I liked it. And I liked it more at the time. I think in looking back, I kind of more, not like critical, but just comparing it to the others, I don't like it as much.
Yeah.
And I didn't even mind the driving. It was the driving missions where you're like shooting tanks and you like would go into the tank mode and like they'd be locking on you. You had to like do like a power boost to get out of the way of missiles. That was dumb. I didn't like any of that. One thing that I did kind of like, especially at that time when I was like in college or whatever, I liked that it was rated mature.
Oh yeah.
And it was like dark and a little like gory. And like, I kind of thought that was interesting because that's the thing with Batman of the comic book characters. So I guess Daredevil's the other one. Like that's where you can get a little darker.
Yeah. Right. And I think the story kind of lends itself to that. Cause it's kind of adapting the, I don't even know what they call it. I think, but like there was a movie based on the same story called Under the Red Hood. And the whole idea of like Batman's second Robin, who is Jason Todd, was canonically killed by the Joker in a comic book. And it was like I remember there, the whole story around how that even got written was for some reason they made a poll of, for fans to respond to, like people who are readers of the comics, and they're like, "Oh, like Jason Todd's in trouble." Like, but it's up to you. Would you rather the Joker kills him or he survives? And I think a lot of readers didn't like Jason Todd, and I think there's even been some like thoughts that maybe somebody spammed the hotline because you know nobody ever does that. Fanboys never will take advantage of a voting system, but basically they voted though to kill him, and. Which is kind of a really dark twist,
right?
Even for a comic book that, I mean, it had its dark themes, but certainly I don't think anything to that extent where like we're gonna murder a character like that.
Mm-hmm. I think about like, are we talking like comics or are you talking about just like the game?
So this was like comic books,
yeah. Because like, yeah. I think like the Killing Joke is very dark. You know, that has like the Joker killing Barbara Gordon and potentially assaulting her sexually beforehand. Right. Like, so like they go to places in the comics and I don't necessarily need that in my games, but like,
but I mean, and that's a graphic novel though too. And I think that's a big difference is that graphic novels typically will be none shy about like mature content. That's how you can get like Watchmen and, Killing Joke and like
Frank Miller stuff.
Sin City. Yeah. So it's like there's a lot more adult themes in those, but like for a standard comic book, yeah, to like have a Robin get beat to death feels brutal. But this whole story, and I mean, and that's kind of the... I was unfortunately, and I think they even kind of pointed this out as I was doing some reading and research, people were like, oh, it's supposed to be a big mystery who the Arkham Knight is in this game. But then there's a DLC that like came with the game that's about the Red Hood. And if you know anything about the story, the whole thing is the Red Hood turns out to be Jason Todd, who survived his beating. Like the Joker kind of left him for dead, like in a certain place. And so he like was able to recover. And then he just became very vengeful and like, basically just was like, I'm going to go and kill people because like clearly letting people like the Joker live is not the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a very interesting counter like perspective to what Batman does. Cause he's like, oh, I'll never kill. But like the idea that he would have somebody who is his protege, who's like, no, I'm not going to follow your teachings. I'm going to do it my way. Very Frank Sinatra of him, but
yeah.
I think it's a great story. I just think in this game though too, it just felt, I don't know, maybe it's just all the other aspects with like the Scarecrow and everything kind of felt a little bloated, and I don't know, it was still well told and the flashbacks were cool, but I kind of felt like it was, if you see the Red Hood DLC, you're like, oh, is the Arkham Knight just Jason Todd? And you're like, oh, and sure, it's him.
Yup. Oh, well, video games. What are you going to do? I understand. You wanted it not spoiled, but guess what? That's not how life is.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to deal with the way the story is being told. They got to get those extra downloads.
But yeah, Arkham Knight, I do think there's some aspects that were fun, though. I think there were some new gadgets. Like I said, I like the ability to play as the other characters, too. And mm-hmm. you get a little bit of time to be, you know, the other Robins. And I think that's kind of fun. You get to do the team-ups with them.
Yeah, you can also, like, I think, do missions. Like, it's kind of, like, more of, like, RPG style a little bit. Like, there's a couple things you can do, and you can kind of choose how to navigate it.
Right. Yeah, and I just think it's kind of fun. I think there's even a Harley Quinn like DLC where you get to play as Harley.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember if that was in Arkham City or Arkham Knight, but then I thought that was kind of fun. And she's like in mourning because the Joker is dead. Like the very first thing, which I think is a very like jarring and fun opening, is like you're like seeing like the Joker go into like the furnace and you literally are like cremating
him. Yeah, you're pressing the button to do it.
Yeah, which is just a very, very wild thing. But the one thing I think that also kind of bugged me about this game is that, so we have this whole moment, this whole like big ending with the Joker dying, but then he's still like, Batman's like still infected with like this Joker like disease that's making him like see and hear the Joker. And I don't know. I kind of felt like I was like, are we still beating the Joker thing a little to death in this game? No pun intended with the other thing I was just talking about, mm-hmm. but like, have we kind of not done the Joker? I don't know.
So many characters in the Rogues Gallery to choose from. You know, so many different kind of stories you can adapt from. So it's kind of interesting to see. Yeah, well, Joker's the safe choice. That's why we have so many. That's why the biggest issue with Batman movies is when they come out, they're like, we got to hit the Joker. We got to hit like the ones that we've done before. And it's like, no, your first movie should have like freaking the Calendar Man in it or something, you know, like, or like, Solomon Grundy or something.
Yeah, right.
Like, don't give me like, our first movie's gonna have the Riddler in it, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I know.
And I do think that is one fun thing about Arkham Knight is they give you a chance to encounter pretty much every enemy of Batman's in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm.
I think all the games do a good job, but yeah, especially that one.
Yeah, because I think there is like, you can visit Arkham, or is it in Arkham City or Arkham Knight?
In Arkham City, I think it is.
Where you can visit Calendar Man and he kind of like tells you stuff. Which like apparently there was like an Easter egg and I never picked up on this. If you go and visit him, like, because you know your game system will chronicle what day you're playing it. Mm-hmm. And if you're playing it on a holiday, like, and you visit Calendar Man in like the prison, he'll tell you something about like one of his crimes or something like that that's related to that holiday. It's like, ah, Valentine's Day, my favorite. Or like, oh, the 4th of July. Have you considered like that firework explosions are dangerous and here's why. And so it's just like, but then like one of the things he tells you is he's like, at the end, he's like, I'll be there. And at the end of Arkham Knight, which sees the, is is it established, and maybe the Suicide Squad game says this, is Bruce Wayne just dead then?
Well, big spoilers. Apparently he is a clone. I haven't caught all the story because I didn't also, I think it also ties from the Gotham Knights game a little bit into the Suicide Squad game. I think those two are almost connected.
Yeah.
I'm not far enough along in this game to kind of know the situation, but I remember telling you that like no one played the Suicide Squad game. They released it on PlayStation Plus for free. And then all of a sudden there's these news reports that are like, hey, Batman's not dead. He was actually a clone. And I just found that so funny that if this was a game people actually wanted to play, we would have heard about it when the game was released. We heard about it when people got to play it for free, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, oh, did you know about this? And the developers are like, we were doing this a year ago, but it kind came
of,
out.
Yeah. I know they did a VR Batman game, but I think the idea was to kind of, and like I said, I haven't played all through Kill the Justice League. I don't know if I will. If I do, I'll let you know. But I think from what I heard, it's planning to reset to maybe a more traditional Batman game, whatever that may look like.
Interesting. Because, yeah, so, I mean, the whole big twist in this game, I mean, so Batman kind of, like, eliminates the Joker in his head or whatever else happens there. But in doing so, he is revealed by the Scarecrow to be Bruce Wayne. And everybody knows he's Bruce Wayne. And so the whole ending is that he, like, goes back into Wayne Manor and it explodes or like burns down, right? So that kind of destroys all the evidence and history of Batman with him in there, which is kind of crazy because it almost feels like he kind of like commits suicide in a way of like.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure maybe it was like a death faking of some sort.
Right. He's at a cafe in Italy or something with Catwoman.
Having a Fenebranca.
I know I'll see him at a cafe. He'll wave at me and we'll know everyone is okay.
Mm-hmm. Good movie. I like that movie.
Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
We'll talk about it one day maybe. But yeah, Arkham Knight. I think as the ending to the series, I felt satisfied, but not a little underwhelmed. Or I should say, but also a little underwhelmed. I don't know. I think I wanted something bigger and way better than Arkham City. And it just felt like, well, it's about on par, if not maybe just a step below it.
Yeah, like I said, I think it felt like a sequel that was bigger and better, but not a new console sequel.
Yes. Not something that, and I don't know how you get bigger. Like, I mean, that's the problem is like, once you put them in Gotham City, that's sort of like, that's it. Even if you show us the rest of Gotham City, it still feels like a version of the same game we already played. Yeah, the Batmobile. I hate the tank battles. That got so old after a while. But, oh, and Poison Ivy also dies in this game. She kind of sacrifices herself to save the city, which I don't know, which I think there's been some very good in a way that they've kind of brought Harley into more of like kind of being an anti-hero. Poison Ivy's also kind of become an anti-hero. Like there's the Harley Quinn series. So it's kind of fun to see some of these characters sort of like take a opposite heel turn where they are more becoming like, oh, actually they could be decent people. Mr. Freeze as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the fun part of these games is you kind of see these real character arcs for all these characters and they have some capacity for growth or in some way or another, either becoming more evil or less so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anything else you want to say about Arkham Knight?
No, I think that's that's all I have to say about that.
Because that'll get us to the last game in the series here of, and one that I have not played, mind you. We just talked about it.
I just want to say, though, they say life is like a utility belt. You never know what you're going to get.
Shark repellent spray.
Hell yeah.
So Rocksteady then was initially rumored following Arkham Knight to be working on a Superman-themed game, which they later debunked. Because they were working on more than just Superman, it was a Suicide Squad game called Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. It's announced in August 2020, so this is like 5 years after Arkham Knight came out. And it would be set in the Arkhamverse, they said, but plot threads established in the Arkham series, which included the Joker's death and Batman being revealed as Bruce Wayne, would continue in this game. Game was initially slated for 2022, but was delayed multiple times before it actually came out in February of 2024. To mixed at best reviews. So as you kind of mentioned, if people actually played this game, they would have known a lot about the twists. But it sounded like following the game's release, and then, I mean, pretty much it was a critical failure. I mean, I think they expected this to be a huge thing, and nobody really played it.
Mm-hmm. That trailer initially, I remember being psyched.
But I think the biggest thing that, like, did it, I was like, so, okay, so you're playing as this, but then you kind of see them with, like, guns, and it's like, but these characters all have different weapons? So is it true they have, like, purple pellet guns in the game, or...
Some people, so like I've been playing as Deadshot, so dude's got guns, and then yeah, everyone kind of has like some sort of projectile thing, but Harley Quinn has the up close, she has like the bat or like the big mallet thing, and
okay,
but it is mostly a shooter, it's a different gameplay style, but it's kind of a very fun, it's like a very lock on and shoot game, and it's very fluid, a lot of jumping and flying, and I enjoy the gameplay, it just gets a little like the, it's not as fun to fight enemies in this game as it is the traditional Batman games.
That's too bad.
I will say I am digging the scope of the story and just that it's like a big crazy cosmic story. You know, you have like all these like Green Lantern popping in, Superman, like all this stuff. And I think there's some good stuff in it. It has the tone of the gun Suicide Squad, which I like. I think.
Oh, James Gunn.
Yeah. Okay. The James Gunn Suicide Squad movie. People forget it exists, I think, because it came out in the pandemic, but it's actually a pretty good movie, I think.
It is, yeah.
Basically
got him Superman, right? Like.
Probably, yeah. I really dig that Suicide Squad movie. Yeah, I don't know if I'll finish it, but I don't think it's as bad as the rep got. I just think it was a lack of interest issue more than anything.
Yeah, I think what they kind of said was, according to some anonymous sources, there was sort of a troubled development process that included a lot of shifting priorities, some managerial bottlenecks, what they called a culture of toxic positivity. Which I think I could probably see that, where you get a lot of yes men. A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, that's a great, great thing. We're doing a great thing. And it's sort of like nobody's willing to step up and say, guys, this isn't good. This isn't right, like what we're doing, you know. So, I mean, and that can derail a game.
I think if it wasn't made and tied so directly to the Batman games, I think it would have been a lot more successful. And I also not big into this new video game style where there's like, 4 or 5 playable characters and you're always connected online. And like, I never play with people in that game. I'm not anti playing online with people, but
sure,
it's like built more for that where, and I get how people could see that being fun. And if you had 4 people that would like to play, that could be fun. You all have your character and you run around doing it. It's just like, I don't know. That's not for me as much.
Yeah. I think that's what kind of hurt my appeal in that game was that, one, I didn't hear great things. Two, I'm like, I'm not an online player really at all. And three, I was just like, and if it's not going to be the same mechanics, like what I liked about the Batman games is you get to play as Batman. Like, I like these characters that are in the Suicide Squad game, but I'm not dying to be Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, like you know? I said, I'm not a big comic guy. I'm a big Batman guy.
Yeah, so I think that's what it did have going for it, and why, even though it's the same developer, why they probably took one on the chin a little bit here. So
I will highlight there is one kind of cool level in the early part where, because mild spoiler for Kill the Justice League, is the Justice League is infected by Brainiac, so they're like essentially like changing people into these weird alien monsters. They're the bad guys, and in the Justice League are the good guys. And there's a level where you're in a Batman museum, and evil Batman is trying to like take you out, And it's pretty much puts you in the perspective of like a thug in an Arkham game.
Oh, man.
So like he's up there doing stuff and like you play as all the characters and get eliminated. Like it's kind of like a story thing.
That's
fun. But it's just so fun to like be in that other shoes. And it gives you kind of like, it gave me like a little bit of antsiness. Like, where is he coming from? You could see like how you could spray like the bat thing and make it explode, like the explosive gel, how you would like draw the bat, you'd see that on the ground and have to like avoid it and stuff like that. I thought that was cool, like I liked that, but yeah, it's just not necessarily what I think what people wanted.
Yeah, I think it was just a little bit of a two different flavor for everybody, although I do like that. I mean, and we barely talked about some of the gadgets too. I mean, that's part of the fun of the Batman game is that, yeah, you have the batarangs that you can throw at thugs, you can freeze people, you can spray explosive gel that either reveals areas or you can use it as sort of like a mine to like blow guys up as they walk by you, right? And I think that's just part of the fun. The zip line's a lot of fun for as frustrating as it can be sometimes to try and use effectively. And you can kind of like turn that into your own little tightrope that you can drop down and beat people up. And I don't know. I think that all missing from that game just was sort of like a turnoff for me. That's just how I was. So that being said, perhaps this is a perfect segue to talk about Show Me the Franchise.
Show Me the Franchise.
Show Me the Franchise. I know you talk a lot about it. Things that coulda, woulda, shoulda happened.
What do you think you would want to have seen out of the series or something you'd still like to see out of the series?
I'm going to go a little more abstract with this one because our podcast, I do it. Fuck I want.
Yeah.
I think I just want a new Batman game and it doesn't have to be made by this company. Okay. I want it to be an action adventure game. I don't necessarily need it to be made by this company. I mean, if they're going to be like, hey, we're kind of going back to basics, I'd be very excited. So I guess that would be my within the Rocksteady family, what I would want. But my big thing that I would want, I just want a movie in this vibe of the original one. I want the phantasmic, darker but technicolor look. I want the greens. I want the purples. But I want, like, the darkness. Like, I thought that's what Matt Reeves' Batman was going to be, and it ended up being a little too close to Nolan's for me. I still love that movie, but it's still not quite fantastic enough for me.
Yeah. I do wonder if maybe now that James Gunn is kind of involved and he's not very shy about incorporating a lot of comic book elements, then maybe we'll see that more Arkham feeling Batman movie. I mean, for a while, I thought there was talk that the Pattinson movie was going to be an Arkham Asylum movie. And I got pretty excited about that because I think while that would feel a little reiterative of like, here's the video game and like you already have all this, I'm like, I do love that idea of like, what is the type of movie I'm thinking of where they like they go up like floor by floor? It's like the Raid. Cop. Yeah, or the Raid.
That is something I think everyone's had this idea, but I always thought I want a Batman movie that is like the Raid meets like a 70s prison movie.
Yeah.
And it's Bruce Wayne, kind of like the opening of Arkham City, in jail. He's got enough problems being a rich dude, but the boiler plot of this is you've got a maybe side plot where someone's gonna leak the information that he's Batman,
right?
And the whole movie is a Batmanless movie until like the last 20 minutes, and you get somehow, you know, by movie plot, Alfred can drop off that suit pack into the thing.
Sure,
he suits up, and you just get 20 minutes of like the best Batman action, like. I'm going to say it. The Affleck Batman fight scenes in the Batman versus Superman movie are fucking sweet. I know that like people are like, he probably killed that guy. I'm not worried too much about that. Like, I don't want Batman to like straight up shoot a person, but I actually don't have a problem if he's like fighting someone and he like grabs the gun and like double taps a dude in the chest. Like, to me, that's self-defense. in the realm of Batman, not real life.
Right.
But I just think that's the movie I want. Like, kind of a slower burn, like, old school prison movie. Like, Cool Hand Luke meets the Raid. A lot of hand fights and stuff. And then at the end, you just get, like, a 20-minute beautiful action scene.
Yeah, that almost feels like a classic like superhero movie, though, where it would be a long time where you don't have them like be the thing, and then you get at the very end, they become the thing.
Yep, it'd be the movie where all the worst comic book people would be like, this movie sucks, he's not even Batman. And then all the cool people are going to be like, this movie fucking rules.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can't remember what that is. I just remember them, there being like movies like that, though, where they like completely hold it back until like the very, very end. I mean, even Spider-Man to some extent.
Yeah, a lot of the origin movies.
Takes a while for him to become Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Which also is another question here, too, that I had was, what other heroes or superheroes would you want to see in a type of game like this? Because Spider-Man is another example of like an open world that mm-hmm. is exactly like Arkham City, but I think as successful, if not arguably more successful.
My only thing is, and I'll hear any argument that people for the Spider-Man game, so I think they're pretty close for me. Is there isn't good stealth in the Spider-Man games. You can do stealth stuff, but it's not, it doesn't feel like actual stealth stuff.
It's not like Batman, yeah.
Yeah, and I like multiple ways to approach a fight in a game. I don't like it just to be one thing. And I think the Spider-Man game, to its credit, has enough diverse fighting in it that it does feel fun and different every time.
Right.
But, I mean, the more I see, like, the work on it, the less I want this. But I was all about that Wolverine trailer when it came out.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to be made by Insomniac. I want it to be made by Rocksteady, to be honest. Like, I want the vibes of the Batman game more for Wolverine's story than the Spider-Man game. Because the Spider-Man's very, like, clean, bright, and fun.
Yeah, which, I mean, is very reflective of his personality.
Right.
And this was kind of the downfall, I think, of a lot of the Batman movies that came. And I think this is my biggest problem with the Zack Snyder movies in general. Well, I agree, like, that sequence with Ben Affleck in Batman vs. Superman. I mean, there's a couple of sequences that are pretty fun. I'm like, these movies don't have to be dark and gritty because The Dark Knight was dark and gritty. That's not what made The Dark Knight good. The Dark Knight was good because it was true to the style, the tone of the graphic novels, and to the character. The character is kind of a dark, brooding character. If you tried to make Spider-Man like that, and they kind of did with the Garfield movies a little bit, mm-hmm. I think that's why they suffered to some extent.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Woman, perhaps.
But it just, you know, you get off tone there. And I think that is what you do run into if you try to do a game like a Wolverine. Like, what is the right tone for Wolverine? Mm-hmm.
I think dark is, I like a darker Wolverine. I like darker comic books, to be honest.
Sure.
I don't really like the splashy pulpy, or not pulpy, but like old school Batman. Like, there's a place for it, I guess. Here's the out of left field one. I think he's considered a comic character, maybe not traditionally. What about like those Just Cause games? Hmm. I want Zorro Just Cause.
Zorro? Oh man.
Cause I like what Zorro was about. He's about like helping out the people. He's kind of like a Robin Hood guy.
Right.
Think of just beautiful like landscapes running around almost like a Red Dead Redemption. And you could have cool whip, you could have cool sword, cool disguise. You could be like Assassin's Creed, hopping on buildings, riding horses. Like, I would love like a kind of throwbacky adventure game, but make it ultra stylized like a Just Cause game or something.
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun, though. Especially just thinking outside the box, like you said, with Zorro, which is not like somebody I'll reach for right away. But
bring back Antonio because he can do the voice. Why not?
Now, if they did that type of game, even just make the Mask of Zorro.
Right now, Tom's doing the Antonio Banderas gif, right?
Where he's putting his fist to his mouth. Mm-hmm. I love that gif. I like those picks, though. Because, yeah, I think I'm with you on I want a proper Batman sequel. I also kind of acknowledge, though, that I don't know how many more stories and different villains they can really offer us with him. That's why I was kind of excited by the prospect of Gotham Knights, which we kind of glossed over because I think that was also, we mentioned, WB Montreal game. Didn't also have great reviews.
Very similar to the other game, the Suicide Squad game.
Because one thing I do love about Batman, and one thing I do, or I've started to gravitate towards, because I don't think we've gotten the right version of it in multiple forms, is I like the Bat family. I like that you got this big fucking rich-ass millionaire dude who's just bringing in all these kids, teaching them how to fight, and then they just, like, let them go, and they all pick their own little moniker, and they're just, like, crazy little fucks, like, running around, like, Robin and Nightwing, Batgirl, whatever else you have. There's so many different ones now, but it's just this idea that you have these people who are, like, I don't know, they, like, they became the family that Bruce never had, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of a fun aspect of, like, yeah, they were going to bond over just kicking ass. Like,
you must love the Lego Batman movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what that is, right? Yeah. That's the plot of that movie, is, like, finding his new family with the people that are around
him. Michael Cera, obviously. Yeah.
And fucking Ralph Fiennes as Alfred?
Yeah.
That's so good.
It is great.
I forget about that movie and how good it is.
I forget about just Ralph Fiennes until he shows up in shit like Conclave. And I'm like, this guy can act.
I have to say this. So it's been announced recently the next Nolan movie is going to be The Odyssey.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be tight shit, tight shit. I bring this up because I was on Apple TV and I'm looking through. I've been checking religiously what's available to rent for $5.99 since we're in Oscar times. Just every day I go there and see, because you never know when shit drops anymore.
Right.
And I see Ralph Fiennes, this picture, and he's looking haggard. I'm like, what is this movie? I click on it. It's a historical action movie that came out this year, where he's Odysseus, but it's the last chunk of the Odyssey. I don't know how familiar with Odyssey, where he comes home and all the suitors are there.
Yeah.
It's that plot, and he is ripped to shit, stabbing and cutting people, but he's also, it also seems very, like, dramatic, too. Like, it's, sure, like, half a classic Ralph Fiennes, like, because you could see a very, like, meditative version of this story, but then it cuts in. There's also just, like, action scenes. It has, like, I saw clips from it. I want to watch this movie when it's streaming or something, where he's setting up the arrow thing where he's going to shoot the big arrow. And, of course, like, it shows him, like, no shirt, sinewy six-pack, because he is in great shape right now. He's got a bow that's taller than him, and it's going to the floor, and he's just standing there like that. Oh, man.
I love it.
We got to check this out.
I didn't even hear about it.
I didn't either. I'm watching this trailer. I was like, this looks like one of the best movies ever made.
I mean, if Nolan had made a movie, though, where Ralph Fiennes was Odysseus, that shit's going to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
I now I'm kind of like missed opportunity. Although you're going to have little Tommy Holland is our Odysseus. Hey, I gotta get home to my Zendaya. I don't know why he's like Danny Zuko.
Spider-Man over here.
And Spider-Man, everybody. I think the other thing, though, to talk about a different hero in a different game, what I would want to see, because I don't think we've seen a successful version of this in 3D. Well, I shouldn't say that. There was a version on GameCube of this. I want to see the X-Men in general. All of them. Because I think they had, it was like X-Men, like Mutant Apocalypse or something like that. Or it's like, there was like a version where you could, it was like an RPG where you could carry it around. But it felt a little too Warcraft-y for me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I like the idea, but I just have a feeling they're going to do something we don't like with it. But the I can see what you're picturing before you even describe it, and I want that so bad.
Yeah, because it's like, yeah, okay. And here's my mini rant. And I'm going to keep this very short and sweet. I like Wolverine. There are so many other interesting X-Men besides Wolverine, and I'm so tired of Wolverine stories. I liked Deadpool and Wolverine. That was fun. I am ready for different X-Men. There are so many different X-Men stories that do not... Or Wolverine is a small part of it. Like, yes, he's accessible because he's fun, and Hugh Jackman played the shit out of him. Like, Hugh Jackman's great. I love Hugh Jackman. Like, I have no issues with all of this, but I'm also like, give me my boy Psyche again. Give me my boy fucking Nightcrawler, because I was so mad that we basically didn't get any more Nightcrawler after X2. And I'm listening. Yes, I love Frasier. Oh, Kelsey Grammer playing Beast.
Oh, I love him as Beast.
And he's great as Beast. But like, I felt like we got this like really fun performance as Nightcrawler. There's this amazing sequence. And like, that's the type of shit I want in a game like this, like, mm-hmm. give me Nightcrawler teleporting all over the city, just fucking around. You can switch between him and, like, maybe, like, two other people. Like, okay, we're going to do a mission. And you do it in, like, this Batman Arkham style. That's what I would love is, like, him and Rogue and, like, or something else.
Pick one more. I'm just curious who you'd want.
Another X-Men?
Yeah, that you'd want to play as Professor X.
What they call you, Wheels. And Storm, man. Storm is fun as hell.
Yeah, Storm would be cool, and that's never done correctly. I saw someone posted, like, there was, like, Io Debris in talks to play Storm. I love her, but someone said her goofy ass doesn't need to play Storm. And I was dying. I was like, she could. She's a great actress, but I just, because she is goofy as hell, too.
She is.
I want a Kiki Palmer, maybe, or someone. Ooh. Like, that would be the more fun style choice, or someone more intense.
Well, they had, what's her name, play Storm in the, is it Alexander Shipp or something like that?
The Apocalypse?
Yeah, and she plays Storm in Apocalypse, and she was in, I almost said Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. It's not that though. Tick Tick Boom with Garfield. Yeah. She's in that. And she's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a great movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That is total side thing. That is like Val Kilmer just fucking cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah, some nice Michelle Monaghan too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like Downey Jr. is doing his Downey Jr. in that thing, mm-hmm. but it's everybody else that makes that movie great.
But that was new to me at the time. I didn't know, like, I was pretty new to the whole, like, when he was doing that and that in a Scanner Darkly, too. He's kind of doing the thing that we're used to now. And I was like, oh, I like this.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, because he makes it look so natural.
We could do a What's His Name episode. Who's the writer director who did?
Shane Black.
Yeah, Shane Black.
Yeah. Which we could talk about Iron Man 3 then. Iron Man. So then we can talk about the Avengers game that came out, that RPG game.
I was pretty disappointing.
I beat that game and I don't know why. The story was good. The gameplay was pretty mid. I just was like, okay, I'm doing the same shit. I'm facing the same enemies. And it was Square Enix who made that game. And I'm like, these guys have made some of the best games ever made. Final Fantasy VII, whether or not that's your jam, it's a great game. It's an epic game. And it just was like, how is the studio turning out an Avengers game that just has no juice? Like, it's pretty sad in that regard. But anyway.
Have you seen the trailer for the Black Panther Captain America World War II game?
No.
When we're done, check that out.
I think I missed that.
Could be, it's, they just have like a cinematic trailer right now, but it looks like what you want and what I want.
We'll see. And that I could get on board with because...
And it's like T'Challa's dad and, well, I guess Captain America's been around.
Maybe so I did him. See a trailer for this now that I'm thinking about it. Right. So World War II, you said, right?
I believe World War II time. Okay. In France. World War II France.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah.
You know what? I did see this. I'm totally lying. I was just like, wait, did I see that yet? But I think you're right. That'll be a lot of fun.
So yeah, with Show Me the Franchise, that's something video comic book wise that I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. So does that get us to power rankings?
I'm ready.
Top three moments from the Arkham series. Would you like to go first or you want me to?
I'll go first. I say it's a lot of different just like fight scenarios for me. And the number one, which we brought up briefly, is there's the fight where you're fighting the Joker, bunch of henchmen, and two of like the like roided out big henchmen. And in this room where you're fighting, there's these two train tracks of these little trolley cars that are running through. And it's just this great long fight where you're like fighting people, avoiding getting hit by trolley cars, maybe throwing someone onto a track so they get hit by a trolley car. And I think it's not great for describing, but it was just a moment in the game where I was like, this is like probably the best action set piece, if you want to call it that, of the game.
Sure.
I will say, and I'll just group them all, I love the Scarecrow levels in the first game. They're very simple. You're just kind of hiding behind walls while this giant Scarecrow circles around.
Mm-hmm.
And then my third, I think I'm kind of dipping from each game, and I'll continue this, was the opening of Arkham Knight, where you're just in a diner, And it's like this kind of POV thing, and you're, I guess, a police officer or something, and someone's like, hey, there's a guy smoking over there. You go over, and it's the Scarecrow or a Scarecrow lackey. I'm not 100% sure. He sprays you with the fear toxin, and then you're in this diner, and everyone just turns into these monsters, and they're coming at you, and you take out your weapon and start shooting, and you're doing this, but also in your brain, you're like, no, I know what's going on. This is awful. And like that was an announcement that this was going to be a mature, kind of darker game.
Right. Yeah. And I do remember that. And that was like crazy. Again, he does kind of start as Bruce Wayne in that game, doesn't he? Man, I totally forgot about that. Good picks. I like it. I'm trying to think if I can do one from every game now because I'm trying to remember. I mean, I'm trying to remember Arkham Asylum a little bit. I really just loved the whole aesthetic of everything in that game. But you called out something earlier too, where you're like walking through Crime Alley as like little Bruce, and it keeps cutting back and forward from the asylum. Like, I think it's like the hallway to the warden's office. And then you're like in Crime Alley. And I remember that just feeling so devastating. Cause this is when you're like under the influence of the fear toxin. And then suddenly you end up in like another Scarecrow fight. And man, it just, that's the highlight of the game. I mean, hands down, I think it's fun. Like I said, I was so shocked when the game like hard resets and you realize, oh, it's actually a cutscene or whatever. Cause I don't know. I mean, it just Mark Hamill in general throughout the series.
Secret sauce.
That could be a moment in itself, but I won't cheat. In Arkham City, I think, I do kind of like the Solomon Grundy fight where it's just so unexpected because you're like just like going through like the bottom part of this area and like you find that and it's just like, whoa, holy shit. Because like, I'm a fan of like old school shit, like Super Friends. And I remember Solomon Grundy being a real goofy fucking character.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, he's kind of scary in this game. And like, it's kind of wild that like he's almost like a Frankenstein's monster type thing.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to, I think, like bring him into something that's a little more grounded. But, I think if I actually had to pick, though, a moment in that, I mean, I'll pick that one. Why not? There's so much fun. I think the other thing I was going to say was the twist ending where you realize the Joker is Clayface.
Right.
And then you end up in a Clayface fight and you're like, oh, shit, I got the wool pulled over my eyes here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Arkham Knight.
Tank fights.
I'm struggling a little bit because I'm like, it's not that I dislike the game at all. I just, I'm like, what's a memorable moment? And I think that opening diner scene is a good pick. I think that opening thing with the Joker is a good pick where like he's in the cremation chamber and you're like, oh, you're starting the fire. There is one thing involving that that's different. If you beat the game, and you try to play it on, I think it's either hard or nightmare mode, which you can unlock at the end of the game by like beating it. And you have to like beat all the things. You can restart it and like you get access to nightmare mode. And when you go to that opening cremation scene, it's now that you know after beating the game that the Joker is just like a figment of your imagination. He's all in your head. That image of the Joker like comes alive and like he's in the cremation chamber as the fire is coming up and he's like laughing at the screen and it scared the absolute crap out of me.
Like, that sounds familiar. I wonder if somehow I saw that.
You might have. And maybe if you started the game, I think maybe it's accessible if you beat the game at all and then play it again.
Maybe that's what, because I definitely probably went through again.
Yeah, and I think that's like their little jump scare. But I was like, whoa, what? Yeah, because I was not expecting it. Because you're like, oh, I know this scene. Like, I've seen this before. But that was kind of their announcement of like, there's a little changes. But
which is something you seem to talk about and like are like the little Easter eggs to the games.
Absolutely. I mean, I loved exploring the little things. I'll listen to all the audio tapes like that they have like the interviews in the first game with all the inmates and just kind of like telling them like what their stories are. And you hear a little bit about like Riddler's pathology and Mad Hatter, and he's just like completely off his rocker.
Or when you're tracing the telephones, Victor Zsasz, he's telling his whole origin story, like trying to play cards with the Penguin. And crazy Zsasz. Stuff.
Yeah, he's a wild character.
Zsasz, I think, is someone you could see in the Reeves Batman. I don't know if that's someone I would want to necessarily see because I don't think there's much going for him, but I could just see that character being in that world.
Well, the one character that I have heard about, and this was actually one of the side quests I really liked in Arkham Knight, is you're like chasing down the character of Hush. And he's kind of like the antithesis of Bruce Wayne, where it's like when he was a kid, he killed his parents or like set up an accident so that he would be orphaned and become a millionaire, billionaire. Mm-hmm. And so he like became a surgeon and he was like good friends with Bruce all along. But like what he really is trying to do, and in the Hush, like I think it's a comic book series that he has it by, like he's basically trying to like murder people and take parts of like their face or whatever so he can reconstruct Bruce's face and surgically make himself look like Bruce Wayne so that he can kind of just pass him off as himself.
Sort of like Mendes Brothers coded a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. It's pretty wild. He's a crazy character. And I was like, that would be a very interesting character in like a Matt Reeves movie.
I think Hush, I have heard, I didn't know his story though. Hush, Court of Owls, and Mr. Freeze are the three things that I don't know if they have any validity, but are like the whispers you hear about the next one. If they figured out Freeze, I would love it. Because the Freeze in the comics and the animated is not the ice to see you. Like he's like a really like almost Shakespearean style character with like a lot of depth. And I don't, you know, it'd be interesting to figure out a way to do that in the Matt Reeves world.
Absolutely. But it's just like, then you have to kind of suspend your disbelief of how is a guy surviving by like only being living cold. I don't know. Weirder shit's happened. But Fred, I believe that gets us to the end of this Arkham episode. Again, another wonderful journey with Batman that comes to an end. But one day we got a lot more Batman to talk at some
point.
Yep,
yep. Joe?
Step That's up, BB.
Yeah, you got a lot of episodes to cover.
What is there anything you would like to plug, Fred?
All right. So I will be performing with Fractal at the Interchange Theater Saturday, February 15th.
Excellent. So if you're listening to this, catch it next weekend, next Saturday. Fred will be performing at the Interchange Theater. That's in interchangetheater.com.
Right? Yeah, yeah, interchangetheater.com. Get some tickets. And then you said the 6th? Tomorrow. It hasn't been set in stone, but I feel confident saying I'm going to sound like a big idiot if it's not true. I am going to be hosting Apocalypse at the Interchange Theater, which is pretty much all our old coaches and a team together.
That's right.
And that's why I jumped at the opportunity. I saw the host spot was open. So, I mean, unless they tell me I can't do it, which I don't think they will, we'll see. It'll be another chance to see me, but also just a chance to see like some of like the great improvisers, like honestly, some of the greatest performers I've seen in person, like Mike Vitette, James Bowen, Lee Rowley, like and Sean Keith, like Vince, all these guys, big hitters. So
definitely great, great performers in the city. Check that out at theinterchangetheater.com. You know me, I'm going to plug the podcast here and now. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and YouTube. Please remember to rate and review this episode. You can join our Patreon, and you can subscribe for $1 a month for more exclusive content. You'll be getting one extra episode per month. Special thanks to Nick Spitza and Mike Schwantz for our opening and closing themes. And stay tuned for our next main feed episode, where Fred, it's that time for Oscar. Best movies of 2024.
There's going to be some surprises.
There's already been some surprises. And we'll talk a lot about some of the nominations that came through this
year. It's been a very interesting year for movie going.
That it has. And if you're taking a peek at the Patreon, our next Patreon episode will be about party food.
Party in the food.
And then soon after that, we'll be getting into our best of 2024 beyond. But that's all Patreon, gated content, be TV, games, all that good stuff. So stay tuned for all that, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye. It's charged my phone, drive, listen to you. And what the talk